Good afternoon, Keith Killian is my name. Aaron Burke is present as well from the law firm, and my number is 9042. And I'd like to start by talking about the evidentiary issues. We've argued that the ALJ erred by not allowing evidence of Alvarez's agency relationship. Now, the judge allowed the evidence to come in initially to determine whether or not agency was established and excluded it. Likewise, the court excluded evidence of the fact that about 18 out of 20 of the employees that worked for Elkhorn were non-residents, presumably illegal. Both of these pieces of evidence, I think, are misapprehensions of the law on behalf of the ALJ, and that the findings of fact, particularly finding number 21, which is emphasized by my colleague, could have been found differently if this evidence came in. Finding number 21 is basically that the employer didn't know that the employee was illegal and didn't intend to punish him by firing him if he filed a workers' comp claim that became expensive. However, if this evidence had come in, that finding could be reversed. So I think it's important to indicate that agency was established. Alvarez solicited Olaus to work for the company.
Sure, Mr. Killian.
Yes.
Just a matter of housekeeping. Your client's name is Israel Ruano?
Yes.
And you've got no objection if we use his name as the party to this case. It's actually Israel.
You certainly can use his name.
Right.
He doesn't deny that.
His alias is Ernest
Olaus. Right.
Well,
and Judge Graham, I think it's important to know that if Alvarez is the agent of the employer knew he was illegal from the word go. And there's an interesting New York case that basically says in so many words that you've got to dupe the employer. If the employer's not duped, if the employer's complicit with the idea that you're illegal, then in that particular case, it's not appropriate to say that the employer somehow has been duped and therefore the employee is not subject to, say, the doctrine of equitable estoppel.
Mr. Killian, what record evidence is there that Mr. Alvarez was acting within the course and scope of his employment as a person who recruited or otherwise had the authority to refer or hire employees?
Well, when the judge excludes all that evidence because she deems it to be irrelevant, there's none. But if she had ruled properly under the evidentiary rule, then
I thought there was an offer of proof here.
There was an offer of proof.
Yes, and I don't recall that the offer of proof that was made said anything about him acting within the course and scope of his official capacity for the company.
Well, first of all, it's not required by the law.
Well, action alone
can be evidence of agency. And he solicited, he provided documents, he said there's no charge, and that's a very salient factor.
Don't you have to have some knowledge by the principal of this relationship?
You can infer that by the actions. And the fact that hired 18 out of 20 is evidence that the principal knew that these folks were illegal. As a matter of fact, there is evidence. Booth was the guy who was present when Alvarez filed his application. Booth is the same guy who was present when the fellow from Mexico showed him his New Mexico license. And this evidence was excluded also. And the New Mexico license had his actual name on it, not his alias that he was hired under by Booth. And Alvarez tells our client that they don't care that you're an employee, that you're illegal. They don't investigate. All they want is a hard worker. And he worked for more than a year for them, and that was fine. And he worked for another year almost, or at least he was employed for another year almost, until it became apparent that his ankle injury and foot injury was so severe that he might have an amputation. And then they realized after he came to work for a short period of time and light duty that he couldn't do the work, so it was no longer their economic advantage to keep him employed. And just like the New York case says, the wildfire case is only where the conduct actually induces the employer to hire the worker, and that this circumstance is not present where the employer knew or should have known the worker's undocumented status or failed to verify the worker's eligibility for employment. So the employer doesn't investigate. They see his name is spelled wrong. I mean, how apparent can that be? He doesn't know how to spell his own name. That should have let them know. As a matter of fact, I asked the question to one of the employers, the HR people. Isn't that evidence that the person's illegal? Yes, it is. And so getting back to your question, Judge Daly, you know, if the evidence had come in that there are 18 out of 20 of them were undocumented, that Booth, the same guy that hired him, was aware that other people were illegal and took no action whatsoever.
What benefit did the employer get from hiring your client as an illegal? Did he not pay a minimum wage?
Well, he paid a minimum wage, apparently, but you can get benefit for hiring illegal other than that. First of all, if they file a workers' comp claim, you can simply claim they're illegal and don't have to pay it. So he wasn't.
What other benefits? What other benefits did the employer get from hiring an illegal?
Well, I just identified one of them, which is the pertinent benefit here, is that you don't have to pay the workers' comp. If you could hold it over their head that they're illegal, and if they file a claim or, you know, ask for overtime, oh, you're illegal. Anything they do to, if they say, well, you know, I wasn't treated fairly, oh, you're illegal, so they can hold that over their head and probably pay them less as well.
It's in this case that that's what had a course of conduct treating, you know, your client unfairly?
Well, a lot of the evidence was excluded, but no, it wasn't in that sense, but I think you can infer that from the fact that as soon as he became expensive on the workers' comp claim, they all of a sudden discovered that he was illegal.
Can I ask you to back up for a minute here, Mr. Killian, if I can, on the evidentiary issues? With respect to the agency, and I've read the transcript, I actually have it in my hand, the court did give you the chance to lay a foundation for the agency and concluded you hadn't. And under CRA 104, that would be proper. You have to make the preliminary determination. So, I mean, you're jumping to the conclusion and inferences. The court gave you leeway to lay a foundation and conclude you didn't do that. Where is the abuse of discretion based on the record we have?
I think it's a misapprehension of the law, of the rules of evidence as well. It's not just an abuse of discretion as far as a fact-finding determination. First of all, the court found that it was hearsay to introduce evidence that there are other illegal employees. Well, that wasn't...
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I want to take one issue at a time. I will come to that one because I am curious about that. But just on the agency issue, to get to the admission kind of the employee, he had to have been acting within the scope of his employment. And I think the court basically found you didn't prove that. Or you didn't lay, more specifically, did not lay an adequate foundation. Very specifically, what in the record evidence did you put on to lay that foundation when the court gave you the chance
to do it? That he was, as I mentioned before, that Alvarez solicited Olaus or Riano, that he provided him the documents, that Olaus didn't have to come up with the documents. He provided him the documents. Secondly, he didn't charge, and I think that's very salient.
How does that establish that the employer had anything to do with that?
Well, first of all, just think about it. I mean, I think you look at the inferences as well. Documents, illegal documents like this are expensive generally. I think you can take judicial notice of that. And here he was offering it. He's soliciting Olaus. He's offering him the documents. He's providing the documents. He's inducing him. He's saying, look, they're not going to investigate. It's okay. They hire plenty of aliens here. And there's other corroborative factors as well. The fact that there were 18 out of 20 illegals let him know that, hey, this employer isn't going to look at me and say, you can't work for me. So it gives him the impression that there's an agency. And you don't have to have the word agent on your name. He had apparent authority. He was acting as though he did it. He wasn't doing it for other employees, he wasn't doing it for other people that worked for other employees. He was doing it specifically for that employer, and he had done it for other folks. And this is the evidence that clearly established that Alvarez was an agent from A to Z. He was an agent, and the judge just rejects it. So I think that's an error of law.
Yeah, you've mentioned a couple times the 18 or 20 other employees. If I could ask you about that, the evidence, if I recall it, and please correct me if I have this wrong, is that Mr. Olaus, you know, asked people and he wanted to testify. All these people told me they were illegal. Do I have that right?
Well, here's what's happened. He observed that there are 18 out of 20 that 18 of the people there were non-residents and didn't speak English at all. 18 out of the 20 employees. he observed Booth supervise them. Booth spoke some Spanish. And so he observes Booth in a conversation with a fellow who had come in from New Mexico saying, here's my New Mexico license. And he observes Booth take no action at all. So that is corroborative of the fact that the employer wants to hire illegal aliens, was not duped by it, and that Alvarez had an agency relationship with him, because everything Alvarez said is appearing to be true. Alvarez is just soliciting for this Elkhorn, for nobody else, free documents. And so I think that establishes the agency. And, you know, and I think it's an error of law, not just an abuse of discretion or a factual finding, for the court not to recognize agency when it's established. And then we go on. Well, go ahead. If you have additional questions, I want to preserve the last 5 minutes. So it looks like I'm, 4 minutes left?
4 minutes and 10 seconds.
So, I mean, unless there's another question, I guess I'll reserve the rest of my argument.
That'll be just fine. Thank you, Mr. Kelly.
Sure.
Mr. Haley.
May it please the court. My name is Matthew Haley. My registration number is 33003. I represent the appellees in this case, Elkhorn Construction and Insurance Company of the State of Pennsylvania. With regards to the evidentiary issues, which have just been argued, pertaining to the exclusion of the evidence or what was anticipated to be the evidence of illegal aliens working for the employer, the only way that the claimant, Mr. Olaus, could have obtained this information is if he had asked these individuals, are you illegal? Or they provided some verbal response, are you illegal? Or he obtained some information from a written document that these individuals did not have legal residence in the United States. It's elicited based on hearsay evidence. If he obtains this information through hearsay, his testimony in it would be a hearsay testimony, a hearsay statement. As it pertains to the asserted argument that this information was not requested or not elicited based on for the truth of the matter asserted, that's just wholly incorrect. I mean, based upon counsel's arguments here today, he's saying that it's highly relevant that these individuals were supposedly illegal, that the claimant knew that they were illegal, and so clearly this information was elicited for the truth of the matter asserted. He's trying to prove that there are other illegal aliens that work there, and he learned this information through hearsay statements. The exclusion of the evidence in this matter was not an abuse of discretion. It's clearly hearsay statements and hearsay testimony and not admissible in this administrative proceeding.
Suppose the alternative is he wants to show that his state of mind was such he believed it was okay somehow to produce to the employer false documents. In that case, I still am searching for the relevance of that.
Correct. And in the administrative proceeding, the judge was also searching for relevance as to how, whether or not Mr. Olaus knew or had a reason to believe that these other individuals were illegal, imparted any knowledge on the employer that these individuals were illegal. There's no relevance, and it's also properly excluded based on the hearsay rule of evidence. As it pertains to the exclusion of the agency relationship of Mr. Alvarez, as indicated by the Industrial Claims Appeals Office, there is no testimony that there's an agency relationship between Mr. Alvarez and the employer in this claim. None. There's to obtain some determination that there's an agency relationship between Elkhorn Construction and Samuel Alvarez, you have to go through a stretch of logic and multiple assumptions of what's in the record to determine that there is any inkling of an agency relationship. The only agency relationship that was ever existed or ever established to the evidence in this matter is that Mr. Olaus or Mr.
Ruano
engaged the services of Mr. Alvarez, whether paid or unpaid. He engaged the services of Mr. Alvarez to obtain false federal documents, utilized these false federal documents to defraud the employer and obtain employment with Elkhorn Construction, knowing that he wasn't legally able to obtain that employment. Mr. Ronald also signed under penalty of perjury that the information that I provide on this application for employment, which included his name, which also included the Social Security number, that this information was correct under the penalty of perjury. I mean, if you've got an individual who's stating, basically testifying under the penalty of perjury, that this information is correct, why should the employer go on or be required to perform even additional investigation into this individual's legal or illegal status?
Well, it's
already stated under oath.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I suppose Mr. Killian would say to you, they didn't have to do any investigation. They just had to look at the document where the guy misspelled his own alleged name. Shouldn't that, I mean, the Koch, I don't know if that's the proper way to pronounce it, that New York case would at least suggest the employer has some duty to pay attention. And, I mean, I don't think you would say willful blindness is okay. That seems to be, I think that's kind of what Mr. Killian's saying. They knew or, you know, willfully were blind to the fact that this person was an illegal alien.
Well, willful blindness would, I mean, I would agree. If an individual looks at a document that and just is clearly fraudulent on its face, I would agree with that proposition. However, that's not the situation in this case. I mean, how many times have I started to write my name and, you know, I screw up some kind of a letter? I mean, how many times has anyone done that? I mean, does it happen often? No. Is it unheard of? No. I mean, the sheer fact that an individual has some kind of a misscribble isn't necessarily basis to make the employer go through additional steps to verify this individual's identity and legal status when he's already stated, hey, under the penalty of perjury, this information's correct.
As I understand the record, these documents were not seen by the person who terminated Mr. Ruano until shortly before his termination.
Oh, I'm sorry, which individual are you talking about? Are you talking about Tony Phillips?
Yes.
Correct. Tony Phillips was not employed with Elkhorn Construction until after Mr. Olais had been hired. So Mr. Ruano was already an employee of Elkhorn Construction when Mr. Phillips was hired. So you are correct. As it pertains to this finding of fact number 21, clearly there's substantial evidence in the record to support this determination. The finding of fact 21 specifically states respondents, Elkhorn Construction, do not knowingly hire claimant as an illegal alien with the intent to terminate claimant if he had a work-related injury. That is the linchpin argument that they have with regards to any of their equitable estoppel arguments, the unclean hands arguments. Hey, the employer knew or should have known. However, the administrative law judge said, no, they didn't. Could the administrative law judge have drawn some other inference or some other conclusion? It's possible, but that's not what happened. So if this finding of fact is supported by substantial evidence in the record, and the administrative law judge even cites evidence in the record which supports this in that finding of fact, then it should be upheld on appeal. And with that finding of fact, any equitable arguments or unclean hands arguments is basically moot. Without some kind of unequitable action or unequitable finding on the part of the employer, the doctrine of equitable estoppel or collateral estoppel or the unclean hands would not apply. Additionally, the claimant never pled any affirmative issues, never pled collateral estoppel, never pled equitable estoppel, never pled unclean hands. Those issues were not raised. They were not tried by respondents and by consent because we objected to them at the outset of the hearing. In respondents' position is that these issues were waived. They were not pled. So the whole argument with regards to equitable estoppel and unclean hands is not right.
The ALJ rejected that argument, correct? You made the arguments not raised, and the ALJ rejected it.
The ALJ overruled my objections. That's
right.
Correct.
Are we bound? You didn't cross appeal or anything. Are we bound by that at this point, or are we in a position, I suppose, is my question, to say, I do think it was waived?
I believe you're in a position where you could say that it's waived.
Based on what? And you haven't. No one's appealed the conclusion.
Because it was. I mean, it's an issue that was raised at the Industrial Claims Appeals Office, and that issue. You know, again, the Industrial Claims Appeals Office didn't really address the issue of whether or not the claimant waived that argument. So, with regards to the termination for cause, claimant is indicating that he did not reasonably anticipate that he would be terminated for his actions, for providing false identification for the employer. Well, the sheer fact that he went out and obtained falsified federal documents to get this employment shows that he knew he needed federal documents, legal documents, to obtain work in the first instance. And that if he didn't have valid documents, his employment wouldn't happen to begin with. So his the claimant's argument in the appeal that, hey, you know, I didn't know that I was going to get terminated because I had false federal documents, is it just belies the fact of all the evidence in the record. The sheer fact that he went out and engaged in this conspiracy to defraud the employer goes completely contrary to the assertion that I didn't know I was going to get fired. Well, if you didn't think you were going to get fired, then why'd you get him in the first instance?
Is that a subjective test or an objective test? Does it have to be he didn't know he would get fired, or an objectively reasonable person didn't know?
Judge, I would say there would be a reasonable person would know that these actions would result in my termination.
Right.
And that's the situation as it pertains to the termination for cause statutes in the Workers' Compensation Act. If a reasonable person, if you commit a volitional act that a reasonable person would know or reasonably should know would result in the termination of your employment, then you're not entitled to temporary disability benefits. As it pertains to the arguments that the employer obtained some benefit by hiring an illegal alien, it's just completely contrary to the Workers' Compensation Act. The Workers' Compensation Act specifically states that the provisions of the Workers' Compensation Act are applicable to aliens, and that has been determined to be illegal aliens as well. Mr. Ruano has obtained all of his medical benefits. More than likely, when placed in maximum medical improvement, will be entitled to some permanent impairment benefits. It pertains to the subset of temporary disability benefits. And the reason that Mr. Ruano should not obtain some kind of glorified or elevated entitlement to temporary disability benefits for the fact that he was terminated for what is in essence in my brief resume fraud, it treats him totally different than an individual who, say, an attorney. And I don't have a license to practice law, and I go to my employer and I say, hire me as an attorney. I got a license to practice law, and I falsify my documents to my employer. The employer looks at it and says, looks good, hires me. Later finds out, hey, you don't have a license to practice law, and fires me because of my resume fraud. It's the same thing as in this situation. This individual said, hire me. I have valid work authorization to work in the United States of America. The employer obtains the records and say, wow, you're right, we'll hire you on. They hire him, and he stays employed for an extended period of time. He has a work-related injury. He's still employed and for over a year after the work-related injury, and is paid temporary disability benefits for over 9 months during that time frame. After this extended period of time, while he's still employed after the work-related injury, they find out that he engaged in resume fraud. They say, you can no longer be employed here because you don't have the proper credentials to maintain your employment. Any reasonable individual should know or reasonably should expect that their employment would be terminated. So the argument, the claimant's arguments are just moot as it pertains to any kind of a equitable estoppel, collateral estoppel, unclean hands, given the finding of fact number 21. And with regards to the exclusion of the evidence, we're dealing with an abuse of discretion. There's no abuse of discretion in the exclusion of this evidence. There's no evidence that there was an agency between the employer and Mr. Alvarez, despite, as you indicated, the extended time frame in which the administrative law judge allowed the claimant to try and establish some kind of an agency. And at this point, respondents would request that the order of the Industrial Claims Appeals Office be upheld.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Killing, you've got 4 minutes and 4 seconds.
What the claimant's asking you to do is to remand the case back to allow the evidence to come in of the agency relationship, and allow the evidence to come in of the 18 out of 20 employees that were illegal. Because when that evidence comes in, it looks like my client isn't intentionally doing a volitional act that he thinks he's going to cause himself to get fired. If the employer knows you're illegal, hires you even though he knows you're illegal, then you don't expect to be fired because you're illegal.
Mr. Killian, if I can interrupt.
Reasonable explanation.
Excuse me for interrupting. I apologize. Do you agree that it's an objective test here, or do you think it's a subjective test? Do we look to your client's own belief as to whether he'd get fired, or is it an objective?
Colorado Court of Appeals for the answer to that question, and that's in the Starr decision, which is cited on page 54 of our brief. And while the claimant knew that his documents were not legal, just as the Starr claimant knew she was removing toilet paper rolls from the hospital, it is equitable to consider whether the claimant knew he was committing a fireable offense. Claimant understood his employer was aware of his illegal status, so it's subjective. It's not objective. It's subjective, and I think that's appropriate. And keep in mind, this gentleman did not speak English. And although the court finds he has an interpreter, if you look at the transcript, then you'll see that really all this guy did was, the other guy was applying at the same time he was. This other guy spoke some English, so he's saying, here, sign here, put your name here. He wasn't translating for him. And there's no evidence. Look, the burden here is not on the claimant. The burden here to prove this defense is on the respondents. And the respondents didn't meet their burden. Really, the question is, what evidence did they introduce that shows that he was knowledgeable that his actions resulted in being termination? What evidence did they introduce that he should have been reasonably aware of that? As far as the unclean hands, well, let me put it another way. There was some question about whether the equitable doctrines would apply because we didn't plead it. First of all, under Rule 7A of the Colorado Rules of Civil Procedure, there's a complaint, there's an answer, and then you may answer the answer, so to speak, but you're not required to. And here, the claimant's seeking benefits, the respondent's claiming the defense, the affirmative defense of causing his own termination, terminating temporary disability, there's no obligation anyway for the claimant to respond to the affirmative defense. And furthermore, as the court pointed out already, it wasn't preserved. Lost on at the ALJ level and wasn't preserved. So what we're really saying here, what the claimant is actually saying here, is that Colorado's statutory rule regarding termination ask if he's responsible, and the judge applied too narrow a test. The Starr case, the Wildflower New York case gives us some good guidelines on what the court should be doing here. This case, I think, is a case of first impression in interpreting the statute at the Court of Appeals level. And really what the court ought to do is do the same thing it did in the Starr case and ask this question. When you apply the statute, not only was it a volitional act, you should ask, but whether or not the action that was taken in applying for a job which he believed he could get and did get, even though he believed they knew he was illegal, whether that gave him the reasonable expectation that he'd be fired later, even though they hired him knowing what they did. And when you ask that question and when you apply that test, the answer should be that the claimant did not cause his own termination.
Scott, I know your time's up, but I intended to ask you, and this test you just recited, you do rely on, as you say, various ICAO cases. Best as I can tell, those cases kind of say this phrase about this reasonable expectation kind of as a factual recitation of what the ALJ said, and I thought he reasonably expected. What's the genesis of that? I mean, I'm not quite sure where that law comes from. So, I mean, as you say, no Colorado Court of Appeals case has said it, and I'm not quite sure where the ICAO gets it.
Well, just look, I mean, he has to be responsible for his own termination. And how can he be responsible for his own termination when he didn't expect the actions he took to cause himself to be terminated? I think you just look at the statute and it jumps right at your face. How can you be responsible when you think, if you think you're supposed to show up at 9 o'clock and you show up at 9 o'clock and you get fired because you didn't come at 8, then you're not responsible.
Thank you very much. Mr. Killian, Mr. Haley, we appreciate your arguments today as well as your briefs. They were helpful to the court. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.